That's what we serve it to them. They have options. They can care. There's whatever they need. Eat what you want. If you don't want it, honest, we'll serve it to you next time. We'll keep doing it.
Most people are like, wow, your kids don't use. What's the problem? Like, the
message
is actually
paid. Yeah.
We make in the morning, we make a smoothie, which like can often have peanut butter and chocolate syrup in it, but it also has Greek yogurt and kale, and like you can't really taste those things. But if you want to get it in your kid, they will eat it.
Right, so that would be for the child who's really having trouble, you know, getting the right foods in, is coming up with creative ideas. That's, yeah, and that's nothing to do with anything that we're talking about. That's just being creative as a parent and saying, you like ice cream smoothie? I'm willing to sacrifice, as my parent, giving my child a scoop of ice cream in the morning because I know that that ice cream is really loaded with other stuff. And if that works, you know, that's, you know, that, but that, again, that's like nothing we're talking about. It's just, you know, being creative in terms of working with you. Yeah. No.
But like sometimes it is kind of like if I'm holding my daughter, then like, you know, the 3-year-old will get upset because he wants me to hold him and he can't hold him.
Right.
And then like sometimes he thinks he's being her mommy and like he thinks she's doing something dangerous, but she's really not. And he'll be like, don't do that, it's dangerous. And I'll like push her away from holding onto a coffee table. Like something that she's really not in danger, but he's.
So both of those, well, it is. It starts young. Both of those would be like Faber Maslach languages in the sense of where he wants to be held. So that would be where you'd say you'd say something. You really want mommy to hold you and play with you right now? I am going to as soon as I finish. You know, it's that language of not a matter of, you know, don't you see him with the baby? Or I can't hold you right now. It's a matter of. No, it's a matter. Right, so you just want to say, like, you really want mommy to hold you now? I want to also. I'm going to play with you in a minute as soon as I finish. And so you just give him, like, what he needs to do, to either, like, when it's going to happen, how it's going to happen, and you say to him, I see that you really want me to hold you, and acknowledge that you want to do it also. When Faber and Matt, they have a book called Siblings Without Rivalry. They wrote a whole separate book. I gave you some of the cartoons from their original book. They wrote a whole separate book on Siblings Without Rivalry. It's a wonderful book, highly recommended as well, just to read. So in their opening lines, they write, imagine, you know, the scenario in which, you know, one day, out of the blue, your husband comes home and says, you know, sweetheart, you are really awesome. I love having you around. You're delicious. You're fun to play with. In fact, you're so much fun, I decided to bring home another wife just like you. And then you introduce this new wife and you say, isn't she cute? So, how would you feel as that first, like, were you kidding me? And then you would say to your, she would say to you, you know what? Some of the clothing that you have, which looked really cute on you, you're getting a little too big for it. It doesn't really fit you so nicely, but it would look really awesome on this new wife I brought home. So I'm just going to take it out of your closet and give it to her. So like the experience of a child, an older child, as the new child is brought in, it would make sense if the child would want to pulverize the baby. It would. And because like then when you go into shul and everybody says, oh my goodness, he's so cute. And then they say to the older child, like, how do you like your new sister? Like as if they like don't exist. It's all about the new baby. You get all the attention. It's pretty traumatic for an older child when a new child is brought in. So they have this whole routine. It's hilarious. And when you think of it that way, you're like, oh, yeah. So he wants your attention. So the response is to say, like, to a swash is to be like, I know, I'm looking forward to playing with you. Let me just finish, you know, playing with the baby. I'm going to be right with you. Which game would you like to play? Can you go set it up? Like, things along those lines of, I can't hold you now. You know, what do you want to play when I'm finished? Do you want to color? Do you want to play a game? Do you want to read a book? And then have him, like, get that started. And say, as soon as I'm finished, or ask him to help you with the baby. That's, but in,
but
acknowledge.
Don't take the baby over and, like, oh, don't get hurt, or you're taking my tool, and all that stuff.
So he might be, she might be taking his toy.
But most of the time she's just using a walker, because she doesn't know how to walk it. And I want to use that walker. Like,
right,
like,
which again makes sense that he would want to. So in other words, if he's actually being protective, which he might be, so you'd want to acknowledge and say, like, oh, I'm so happy that you're trying to protect the baby. Can you come tell me instead? Just try to acknowledge what he really wants. And that's all about that. That's the Faber-Maslach approach of getting, you know, if he's actually being dangerous, Then you switch back into love and logic, and let's say he actually pushes her down in a way that you think is like totally inappropriate. Without saying anything, you know, it's picking him up, taking him into his room, and saying, babies are not for touching. When you're ready to come back, please join us again in the playroom. Just switch right back into that, and then he'll do it again. And you just keep an eye on him, wait for him to do it, because he's watching you to see if you really mean it. And he'll do it again, because he's worth his a golden child, that's what children do. And you just pick him up at it, and you just pick him up and say, babies are not for touching, or for pushing, whatever your language is. Put it back into him and say, when you're ready to come and play again, we'd love to have you. So it's a combination of how to speak and just that right into that, you know, the behavioral, just the response to whatever it was that he's doing. Again, just from experience, it works. It works magic. It really does.
Okay,
questions, comments? Yeah.
Everywhere we go.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just like at home, it's everywhere.
Right.
So
first of all, say, is it a problem? In other words, I know like you don't want it though. I know it's like, is it a problem or is it not a problem? So it is a problem. Is it a problem at home? Is it a problem at home? Right. So right away, so just stop and think about what you just said. You have a set of behaviors that you're totally okay with at home, that they do regularly. They see that you see them doing it and have no problem with it. But if you switch locations, all of a sudden you can't handle it and you get all upset and angry and stop that and you separate over here. So is that fair or unfair that they should have known on their own which environments this is okay, which environments it's not okay? Right? The answer is it's not fair to them. Now you could teach them, but the first step is, that's why I asked if it's okay or not. In other words, if you would have said at home it's not okay, so then okay, then we have one step. This is an inappropriate behavior always, and how do we handle keeping them separate? But you're not really bothered by the behavior. It's not inherently a problem. It's a bunch of kids. They're siblings. They're playing.
It's fine.
It's just in the supermarket it doesn't work for you.
Find to a shopping cart and they're still, you know, doing that.
So totally fine. So then that needs to be explained to them before they go somewhere, which is hard, a little bit unfair to them, but it's fair to, and if it's a fair request in your mind, then that's a fair thing to say. Like, when we're here, you know, I know at home sometimes it's really tough to say that it's okay to not to keep your hands to yourself at home, but you do have to keep your hands to yourself in the shopping cart. If the behavior is really okay at home for you, and they're just kids playing around, and you don't mind how they're horsing around, it's pretty hard to explain to so then why is it not okay in the shopping cart? Like, why is it not okay in the shopping cart? Because you're embarrassed, or because it disturbs people?
They're going to kill each other in the shopping cart. At home, one can run, and the other can run. You're going to think
there's
just room.
You can
confine
them in the shopping cart?
What?
You can confine them in the shopping cart?
I can get both kids in the shopping cart?
What if they can stay? I like 2-year-olds won't stay in the shopping cart.
That's why I'm
late.
They like sitting in there. They'll stay in the shopping cart.
I like to watch your 2-year-old climb out, or you take your 2-year-old out.
Oh, he can climb out no matter what, how tight I put it, and he's free.
This is what I would tell you. The love and logic approach to that would simply be saying, you know, we're in a supermarket. I need inside voices or appropriate behavior, whatever it may be. And then when it doesn't happen, I don't know if you could choose which one it would be, but it would be the next time you go shot. You need to figure out again a situation where, you know, Yaakov is home, where you can drop him off somewhere, and you can say, you know, the last time, I had a lot of trouble, so I'm only taking one this time, or I can't take either of you this time.
And I do that. Right. And I have done that, and that is great.
It didn't work. And then the next time, I mean, it takes a couple times in which that's... I know, but again, that goes back to my point. I don't think it's fair to expect them to have boundaries because you're okay with their lack of boundaries at home. So you're not teaching them in any way that it's actually a boundary problem. So it's not fair. Why are you telling me they have no boundaries? I mean, it's not a boundary problem. This is fine. This is normal behavior. You've decided under certain circumstances it's not okay. So that's not, I don't know how to, it's not fair to them.
I guess I just feel like with other kids, don't grow like even even like with my older brother to the younger, it's just not, I've never seen.
Yeah, because these are twins.
Right, and I don't, it's like, there's just like, when I say there are no boundaries, like literally it's like her body is my body. They are all over each other all of the time.
Right.
It's always been like that.
So if you wanted to work on that at home, then I would say, that's fine, we can do that, and you could come up with a bunch of normal consequences, and love them. You could do all sorts of different things that would create that separation, and that would spill over to the shopping cart. But if you're not willing to change it at home, because it doesn't really bother you at home, then I don't know what to say to you, it's just a hard thing to teach them to make that distinction. And it sounds to me like really you do want to work on it at home, meaning it's because... So then the place to work on it is at home, not at the shopping cart. It's work on some boundaries in terms of hands are to be kept to yourself and just regularly getting into the habit of separating rooms. As soon as you guys are ready to play nicely with each other, come back together. But just getting into the habit of teaching them those boundaries at home and then expecting it to spill over to the shopping room. You can't start in the shopping cart.
The situation with climbing up with leaving them in the crib and putting them to sleep and leaving them in their room. So my son, at 2 years old, climbed out of his crib and we immediately put him in a bed because I was petrified that
right,
he would
fall out
again and that would be dangerous. But then, I think I was pregnant with my daughter, my son, my husband then gets into bed with him and puts him to sleep. And that became a routine at 2 years old and now he's 36. And he still will not go to bed unless someone lays with him until he falls.
Right, yeah, you need to break that like
it's
tonight.
Bad.
Oh, terrible.
So, and that's what happens when then I put my daughter in bed and she sees someone with, you know, like, she's still not climbing out, but I don't want to put her in a bed because she'll just be coming in and out of bed. But either way, she wakes up and she cries and I bring her into my bed. But the reason why I started bringing her into my bed was we move. Like, there was a lot of transitions at one time, like a move, and there was a new house, and a new this. I said, oh, she's not sleeping through the night because now it's 3 months.
Yeah.
So, like, I just let her, I mean, she's
yeah,
so,
yeah, of
like,
course she's going to scream because she knows that it works.
But I'm afraid that she's by a wind, like, will break it. I'm afraid that she will hurt herself.
So you create a place of, if she can't get out of the crib, you move the bed, crib away from the wall, give her a little bit of safety. You could, I don't know if she's, how old is she?
She's going to be 3.
Yeah, so you could talk to me and say, Mommy's going to stay and sing with you for 2 minutes,
right.
And then it's going to be time to go to bed.
Right.
And you stay with her for 2 minutes.
I have 2 minutes, or I leave this 2 minutes, or she tries to get out.
Right.
And then, but it is a situation of she's not ready to go to bed when my son is ready to go to bed. There, that is that situation.
Right. So she should go to bed for, she's younger.
She's younger, but I try to put them in at the same time. But because he goes to bed at 7, like he starts at 7. So she's not always ready at 7.
She's
napping.
How old is this, your son is how old?
He's in kindergarten.
He's older.
He's going to be 6, yeah. But he's not napping. He needs to go to bed at 7 because he
right.
wakes up at 7.
Right.
So he needs, I could keep her out, and it's not fair, but...
So that's where, like, in my house, that's where we have this rotating bed situation.
Right.
In those situations, like, so the kindergartner would go to sleep in our room
right.
because he needs to go to bed.
Right.
And she still needs to scream.
Right.
So that's...
They're all next. I mean, all the rooms are right, like, 2 inches.
Yeah, once he falls asleep, I imagine he'd probably
be
pretty...
He would stay asleep, but,
yeah. But she needs to learn to cry herself to bed.
Right.
And it's like you're doing her a favor.
But when she can cry herself to bed, but then she'll wake up in the middle of the night and then...
Cry herself to sleep in the middle of the night,
100%. Right. We used to go in and say, we love you so much, give a hug, would not lift the child out of the bed, whichever child it was.
Right.
And then would not lift them out of the crib. So maybe whatever, a little pat on the back or trying to lay them back down, they would get up, scream for another... One of them for hours and hours.
Yeah,
she didn't
even
for a whole week.
Hours hours.
But
yeah.
Eventually, they got it. One
right.
child never did, ever, and would never fell asleep before midnight, which is always a late night. Still is coming, but now she puts herself to bed. Now she's probably kindergarten. She puts herself to bed.
Right.
It might be like 8 o'clock, but she puts herself to bed. She's tired. All of a sudden, we'll be like, where is she? And she's not asleep for
her. Kevin Rothoff's a wonderful sister.
Yeah. But he believed in crying it out.
Which is bathroom. No, but Kevin Rothoff, same idea, and it literally was every 15
So every single time I did it for 2 days, bam, that was it. The first day took me 3 hours to get the twins to sleep. I hadn't slept in 2 years. The first day took me three hours, every 15 seconds. I love you so much, everything's fine, it's time to go to bed. You go up, you stand with the stopwatch. You go back in, and I never even went past the doorway, and I said the same thing. The first night, 3 hours, second night, half an hour, I don't know what that. It's worth it. And this is the way she wants to feel, safe.
But now I have a new situation, because a new transition of her going to daycare. So, I'm telling you, she got up a few times outside, I'm screaming, like I'm saying, oh my gosh, she's having nightmares about going to school tomorrow, like I have to cuddle my baby.
So, yeah, so listen, either one, if you want to go with the other approach, it's totally fine, of going in there and saying, I'm assuring you, I love you, I'm right here, but going back out, if that works, I don't have either one, as long as you're consistent and you don't take the child out.
Right.
But they know they're in, it's bedtime, eventually, try the two, whichever one, either just leaving them on their own or going in. The main thing, again, different story, different children might need different things, different parents might need different things,
right.
But the child is in, there's no going into your bed, there's no you cuddling into their bed, they are going to sleep in their bed. It's required for a child to be able to do so.
Right.
Required for parents to be able to do so.
Yeah.
He moved in the summer, and it was insane for Ariel. I can't even describe. I was crying on the floor at night. I was so tired. She was so tired. And she was in a stage where when she would cry a lot, she would throw up. And what am I going to do? I call a pediatrician from New York, and she's very into this book. And
mm-hmm.
She just said, just let her sleep in the throw up. And I went into her room. I put her to sleep, and I said, good night, Ariel. I love you. And mommy's not coming in if you cry, and mommy's not coming in if you throw up. And she did cry. And she did throw up, and I let her sleep and throw up the whole night. It was horrible. And the morning it stunk, I cleaned it up, and she doesn't throw up anymore at night. It was totally manipulative. It's horrible, horrible, horrible for that time. But
not even slept in line. I mean, she worked. We would say that's what she did. She worked herself into a frenzy. She dealt with the consequences of it, and she said, you know what, that wasn't worth it for me, and she doesn't do it anymore. Yeah, that's severe. My most severe love and logic moment was really we had an event on a Sunday. I think it was an autism walk that we were going to take part in, and it was a summer. It was hot, and one of my kids, who was probably about 7 at the time, declared as we're getting into the car, I'm not going. Now I got 4 of the kids at the time in the car, 3 younger than him and 1 older than him, and he's standing outside at the door. He's 7 years old, saying, I'm not going. I can't force a 7-year-old. I mean, what am I going to do? There's no way you force a 7-year-old into a car. That's not going to happen. And neither one of us are staying home with him. So we said, okay. Called a babysitter. We found one right next door who was available. We said, are you available to come watch our son for a couple hours? She said, sure. She did. I said, fine. We said to him, if you stay, you're going to have a babysitter. Is that okay with you? He said, yeah. Got a babysitter. And he stayed home. He said, no computer, nothing fun, but you can play outside or do whatever he wants to do. We come back home and we say, okay, that cost us $20. How would you like to pay for that? Because we weren't planning on paying the $20 for the babysitter, but you didn't want to come, so this is what we did. It's fine. And again, just kind of like, how would you like to pay for that? 7 years old. So he said, would you like us to make some suggestions? So I said, sure. So he said, and we had the whole trip to figure this out. So he said, summertime, Rifki would take the kids for ice cream just about every day. So he said, now we originally came up with something which was too harsh, and we adjusted it. He said, so usually the kids get a single scoop. So he said, so what we're going to do is every time we go for ice cream, you're going to get a kiddie scoop, which is about $1 cheaper. And throughout the whole summer, you're just going to get a smaller ice cream, and we'll keep a tab until you basically pay back the $20 for the babysitter. And that was it. We said, you could do that, or if you want, we came up with one or two options, which were not going to be relevant to him, to work to earn back the money. And I said, but, that this was a charge that we weren't expecting, and here are your options. And he said, we'll do the ice cream. And that's what we did. And the whole summer, and he would keep, and it became they would keep track, the kids would keep track, and he was getting his little kitty cup. We originally had it where he wasn't going to get any ice cream. So we gave him the choice. We said, would you like to not get any ice cream, which would save $3 a summer? That would only take 5 or 6 trips. Or do you want to spread it out and at least you're getting it? So I'll do the kitty cup. And they did. And it was a matter of, that was a much more pure love and logic of this is what you did, it's no problem. How would you like to pay for it? Ooh, what are you going to do about that?
So then did you have to make sure to go to ice cream
20 times? That happened on a weed. I didn't have to worry about that. That's a natural in my house, so in the summertime.
Why did you not give me the option at that time? They live in, you have maybe so it doesn't cost $20.
I didn't think we had it all worked out.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
No, it was a matter of like, that was like a matter of, I had known from listening to the Love and Logic lectures that that's a standard thing of, I can't force you into the car. You want to get a babysitter? It's fine. You're going to pay for the babysitter. You break a window? No problem. How do you want to pay for that? So like real level, they would have like all the, like they would actually have the children making a phone call to the window repair people and working out the time. So that's like, again, a strict, like real level. So, but this is a matter of like, I'm not fighting with you. You're not coming. I'm not dealing with a grumpy 7 or 8 year old for the whole afternoon. No problem. We'll get a babysitter. And we did. And he paid for it. And that was like the last time that that happened in our home. But it wasn't, you know, vengeful. It was just totally like, that's how it works around here. No problem. You want to stay home. We'll do our best to work it out for you, and you're going to pay for it. And they learned a lesson about finances and about saving money and about kidding. It was like a real, and it was like problem solved.
Dealing with young children, like especially when Shabbos comes in early, mm-hmm. and multiple, one child, just and trying to have guests that maybe you don't. But any suggestions would be standard practice, or you can't bend them. You want them to enjoy Shabbos. You don't want to be too strict, but you also don't want them to.
So, get what aspect are you talking about? Like them playing with mukta toys, coming for kiddush. What?
It's a good example. I don't know. They want this and they want that, or it's time to go to bed and they don't want to go to bed and you got guests and you want to take them. You take them to the room and they scream.
So there's a classic. In other words, if you have little kids and you're having guests on Shabbos, so you need to make a decision in advance. You know, what are we doing with this? Are we ignoring our guests and dealing with our children and keeping a routine, which is fine? We're saying, all bets are off on Friday night. So like in my house, when my kids were younger, we would ignore the guests for 10 minutes because we had it to a routine. It would only take 10, 15 minutes and everything was done. And now as they've gotten older, all bets are off on Friday night. And my 3-year-old stays up till 8, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock because it just doesn't work otherwise. There are too many kids, too much activity. So you just need to figure out which way you're going to go with it. But you can't have guests on a Friday night and think that everything's going to be the same as it is without guests. It's like there's a mentality that we have as parents. I may have mentioned this last week, I don't remember. When I used to come, I used to always come on time to shul in the morning. And then I found out after we had our third child, I was coming late every single morning for shacharis, like 5 minutes late. And it was irking me. And why was I coming late? Because every morning somebody needed something. This child needed to be changed. I needed a bottle for this one. Every morning something was happening. And then the brilliant thinker that I am discovered, listen, if I would wake up 25 minutes before shacharis would start when I was single and when I was married without children and that was enough time to get to shul on time, maybe things need to adjust when you have 3 children. And like, oh, an epiphany, like, oh, look at that. You can't accomplish the same thing in 25 minutes when you have 3 little kids as when you don't. And guess what? If you still wake up 25 minutes before shacharis, don't think you're going to get there on time because, yes, every morning there's a child in your home that belongs to you, that you're responsible for, who's going to need a new diaper or a bottle every single morning. So there's like a certain adjustment that was like this epiphany that like, wow, that's amazing. So like, yeah, like how do I manage my 4 little kids and guests on Shabbos? Like, yeah, that's like you introduce guests, you've just changed the whole dynamic of the home, and you can choose, which way you want to go with it. Like, all bets are off. We're just going to enjoy Shabbos, and Friday nights are going to be late nights in the house. Or you tell your guests, like, I just want you to know there's going to be like this 20-minute pause. One of us is going to disappear for a while. And, but pick one, if you want to have it. But, like, at the stage you're in, I don't know if you want to. I'm not sure if I answered your question or not, but, Kiddush Friday night, by the way, is one of my big ones. I have it on my list. I didn't get to it. In my house, like, calling kids to the table for Kiddush could be a real challenge in many homes. Like, you sit there for a half hour. So that doesn't happen in my house. Because it's very clear that if you want grape juice, you're at the table for Kiddush. If you're not at the table for Kiddush on Friday night, They don't get grape juice. Most kids like grape juice. And I don't, I'm again, this is my kiddish dance that I've discussed in terms of everyone's waiting for everybody to make their first move. So like, I don't announce for kiddish and wait for my children to come like obedient little puppies to the table to wait for me, yes, Abba, please say kiddish. That's not realistic. I tell kiddish time, and then I start making kiddish. And when I start making kiddish, I usually have my two oldest children at the table, and my four youngest ones are not. And before I finish the first two lines, I have everybody at the table, because daddy started making kiddish, and they know, if they want grape juice, they can come to the table. And if they don't want grape juice, every once in a while, they won't come to the table, and I'm not going to force them to come to the table. What do I want? Like, 80% of the time, they're at the table for kiddish, because they want to be there, because they want grape juice. Same thing with washing. You know, if they're not going to, they know there's no food Friday, because I'm not making up the rules, God's making up the rules. On Friday night, we wash before we have our meal. You want to eat Friday night? No problem. Kitchen's inside. You don't need Lechem Mishnah. You're six. I'm going to relax the requirement for Lechem Mishnah. You just have to wash and make a hamotzi whenever you're ready.
So what age would you say you start that?
When kids ready? Yes. 5, 6. You know, much younger, older than your children. They don't understand that yet. I wouldn't worry about that.
Do you expect your children to sit quietly between washing time and getting challah in their mouth? And at what point, at what age do you think?
Yeah, no, I don't. We've never addressed that. I think that's because they go to kindergarten and they learn that, and that's like, if they miss that in kindergarten, then forget it. Forget it. I wouldn't worry about that. Not on the spot, but at the, like, remind them of that every once in a while, just because, so that they don't socially, they will socially learn that that's the norm. But I wouldn't make a big deal about that.
It's like the same issue with the physical, and that they have each other, and it's like two against
everybody else.
Everybody,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and they just knit, but they don't, and they egg each other on, and they...
Again, on that issue, this would be, again, a pure love and logic moment, I would say, and again, it's just combined halacha. Like, what's the halacha when a person speaks after washing and making the netilas yadayim? They wash again. So it's simply a matter of when you feel they were old enough for that, when it was time, if they weren't getting the social cues and they just weren't, it's no problem. Here's the rule in our house. You wash before you have dinner. They're going to get hungry at some point Friday night, usually around dessert time, which is fine. Again, pure love and logic. I'm not going to force my kids to eat, but I know, and they know, Shabbos always comes with dessert. That's when they come to the table. And it's absolutely, of course you could have dessert as soon as you finish lunch / dinner, whatever is going on, and then they'll normally eat. Well, as soon as you wash, yeah, so a kid washes and then he talks. I can't give you the challah until you just wash again. That won't last fairly. If you wanted to go that route, again, that's depending on how much of an issue you're having and how strict you wanted to be with that. But if you were looking for a consequence, if you felt they weren't learning, I would not worry about that. Personally, I think they'll become old enough where that will naturally, like, disappear. If you feel they're getting so old and it's a problem, that's a very simple consequence, and then it would end the problem. But I doubt you'd ever have to come to that. I'm always in that mindset of like, well, what would the con-? I'm just always thinking that way because that's how I just learn. Like, do I need to address this? And if I do, how? So I'm just always in that mindset, which is what I'm trying to encourage. Like, just thinking about, like, okay, what's a normal, natural thing to get what needs to happen here without my imposing my will in a way that they're going to resist. So. This is how, and that's a halacha, it's not me. I don't know the bad guy, this is it. You wash, you made your bracha, you need to wash again. Oh, we'll wash again. That's fine. You don't have to. And then you'll say something else. You say, I'm hungry. Kitchen's over there. The less you have to say, just explaining procedure, the better it is. Oh, they get it. I just found this, I love teaching it because I just find it so, I find it successful. I just find it works. They get it. And even if they're not becoming responsible because they learn it, I just know what I'm doing and how I'm handling it, and I can stay calm and, oh, you don't have to eat. Oh, there's the kitchen. And it's always in your hand. This is the rule. I make that up. I'm the parent here. And whenever you're ready to do it, go right ahead. If you don't want to, I'm not afraid that you're going to starve. Because you know how to sneak the cookies better than I do. So that's how I know about it.
Until now, like, I've been, until I started trying to, you know, take different approaches, I've been home with my daughter, so like it's a lot of like control issues. Who's the boss? And there's a lot of empty threats. Like, I'll do this, or I'll give you this, and then I ended up giving, you know, but now she's not even, like, those things that I really want to give her. Like I used to say, well, if you want to go to school, you have to be toilet trained. You have to go to the bathroom. She's not interested in going to the bathroom, but now I put her in school, so I'm not being consistent, but I have to put her in school. So, like, or I want to give her earrings. Get her ears pierced. Oh, it's your birthday. You want your ears pierced? Well, she's now associating with going to the bathroom, which she's not interested in doing. So, you know, can I still get her? Like, I have to wait.
Yeah, so as you need to, in other words, the problem is, you're right, once you say things, then you really need to sort of be consistent with them.
Right.
That's always what, so you always need to watch what it is that you're saying. That's right. That's one of the greatest things to take out of it.
So, like, I feel like now it's like, okay, now I'm trying to make these changes, but I feel like it's too late.
Never too late.
To, like, no,
not too late.
Fix those other things that I did.
Just restate it as a new thing. In other words, just go back and say, this is what mommy and daddy decided. You know, whatever. It's not too late. You can know parenting is a lifelong thing. It's not too late. Yeah, I don't know, it's fine. In other words, however you...
My son, my daughter. How old is she? She's 23.
Just, you know, my middle child, who is now 3.5. And somebody finally told me, actually, a doctor, that girls can be harder and known for this. She just had no interest in being potty trained.
Right.
And then she was potty trained for a while. And then she went through a phase a few months ago where she was... having accidents. I'm not going to say purposely, but it was. For one reason or another, he would purposely wait too long, or whatever the case was.